Today's show is brought to you by KickUp, who can help you improve your professional development with their easy-to-use platform. Learn more at kickup.co. KickUp partners with leaders to help them get a return on their significant investment in professional development. Today's podcast is also brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, and yes, I do use their service. With such a busy schedule, where do you go for world-class professional development? Especially if you're on a shoestring budget, or if you'd rather go to the beach or relax on your couch rather than travel to some conference. Well, I've got some great news for you. Jethro Jones and I have created an online event called the Transformative Leadership Summit, which will include 40 videos and over 20 hours of content from top education and leadership experts on August 1st. And it gets better. It's absolutely free to register and attend this online event. Over 2 weeks, you will be inspired and challenged to become a better leader. Again, it's all yours for free. Register at betterleadersbetterschools.com/transform.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
Today's episode is special for me, a couple of reasons. Number one, it's my birthday, so yeah, send me birthday tweets at Alien Earbud or send me a birthday email, Daniel at Better Leaders, Better Schools. I am so pumped to actually release an episode on my birthday. The second reason this episode is special is it's a look behind the curtain of what an education mastermind is. I've got episodes out there about it. We'll put a link in the show notes. Actually, it's a bonus episode between 31 and 32 with Jethro Jones. That's one of the podcasts. And then episode 24, I talk about it with Ivy. But this whole show is just going to be a mastermind. It's us masterminding. You're not going to see the video, but you'll have the audio. And you're going to hear just the amount of fun we have connecting, celebrating wins, us discussing the book. And at the time, we're reading the book Essentialism. And then finally, one of our members gets extremely vulnerable. He handled the situation in his mind poorly. But that type of self-awareness, listen, we're all going to fall. We're all going to fail as a leader. But it's that self-awareness of realizing when you make a mistake and then making it better. And we help him process that. And it was an extremely powerful moment for us. And I'm so happy to bring this to you. The group continues to grow. We've got 6 people in the group at the time of this recording, 7 including me. And we could take 3 more people. This is Tuesday nights from 8 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. And once that group's full, we'll definitely be opening other groups as well. You can sign up for a time to chat about a mastermind, see if it's the right fit for you. Or feel free to send me an email too, Daniel at betterleadersbetterschools.com. We'll set up that call and we'll get you in a group. Thanks again so much for listening. I never take it for granted. You're awesome and happy birthday to me. Enjoy the show.
Just wear these, so dish it out.
I think they're pretty nice.
There you go, Kyle.
And man, I'm like in this because we're trying to sell my house. So we're like renovating everything. So I'm not in my normal like movie room, but you know, I was gonna make John salivate a little bit. You know, this is just what I keep in the stash. You know, this isn't even not even hung up. Look, I'm gonna put Michael Madsen back in the closet, John. He's
such a great movie too.
He's going back in the closet, man.
That was on TV the other night. Got my son hooked on that one.
Nice. You know, this summer I have binge watched Archer. I don't know if you guys.
Man, I saw your post on that, but I have never. I've never seen it.
It is ridiculous. It's pretty crazy. I mean, it's like watching Louis C.K. or something. You know, it's not for the faint of heart. That's for sure.
Right, but it's a cartoon, right?
Yeah, it's a cartoon, but it just continues to build on itself.
Right.
And you know, the inside jokes are just so incredibly funny. You know, it's fantastic. But yeah, how was the week, everybody? What'd you do for the 4th? Does everybody have all their hands?
Guess that'd be a bad
joke. All hands.
Yeah.
Mine was real low key. We opted not to not to do the fireworks thing this year with a 2-year-old. We just kind of shied away from it. Just played it cool, cooked out, grilled out at home.
Not bad. What did everybody else do?
We were kind of like Ryan, just stayed at the house. We've got 3 dogs, and one of the pit bulls that we rescued does not like loud noises. So no. I spent most of the night last night with a 60-pound pit bull in my lap.
Yeah.
Does not handle it well at all. And he was from the city. You'd have thought he'd be okay with that.
No way. All my city dogs hate fireworks too.
Oh, he was crazy.
Yeah, I had a Shar Pei like that, man. He, you know, you would have thought it was the apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle,
we went to we were in South Dakota. We're actually in Colorado right now, driving on our way to our next campground. There's a trailer in the back there. And
nice.
There's my little one in the car seat with a ham and cheese sandwich. So we spent the 4th in Custer, South Dakota, and now we're headed to Pikes Peak, and we're going to take the Cog Railroad up the mountain tomorrow.
Nice.
That's awesome. How about you, Colin?
We went to this enormous parade in this other town that we were invited to this party at. But I knew we should have gotten there before because the reason why these people have this party every year because they're on the parade route. But we had to park, and then they were redoing their kitchen, so everybody had to bring desserts. So basically, what wound up happening is we had to park like several blocks away, and I had made this like red, white, and blue trifle trifles are made in this big glass dish, which I had to carry through the entire parade while everyone's looking at my dessert, and it's like really heavy. So that was kind of like an odd aspect to my whole 4th of July, but it all worked out.
Well, what is a trifle?
A trifle is a dessert where you make pound cake, you make I make like this sort of cream cheese, confectioner sugar kind of cream, and then you create a lemon sugar syrup, and you brush the cake with the lemon sugar syrup, and you make layers of raspberries and the pound cake, the cream, and the raspberries and blueberries over and over and over again. And that's a trifle.
Nice.
In a gigantic glass bowl.
Now, Daniel,
through a parade.
Daniel, you know, working in Chicago in an inner city school, are you familiar with if someone is being triflin?
Triflin, exactly.
Yeah. That's my middle name. I'm triflin right. Every day.
Then you are triflin, man. You do the most, and you are triflin for sure.
You gotta shut up talking to me.
Shut up! Wow, it's non-geographical, huh? That is
keep my name out of your mouth.
Oh yeah, but big time, big time.
You're not my daddy. That was always my favorite.
You're not my daddy. Yep.
Shut up, talking.
Oh yeah,
not that we know of, folks. But
right.
Man, you are trifling, man.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure.
Those headphones are trifling.
Touche.
That's good. Hey, in the beginning of Creativity Inc., they talk about this table. And I love that image because for Pixar, the table became an obstacle to connection, to communication, to creativity. So I'm wondering, what is the metaphorical, or maybe it really is a table in your organization, but what, you know, what is the table in your organization? And Ryan, you know, if you already know, since you're at a new school, you could talk about that, but also you could talk about your past experience. Everybody else, for now, at least, they're at their old school.
You know, I thought about that table a lot. I'm not sure whether it's sort of an invisible table. It's a perception thing, I think, more than anything else, of sort of how people perceive the past experience versus the current experience, because our school expanded and it changed buildings. And it's been difficult for some people to make that transition into the fact that the school had to expand, the school had to move buildings, and how that changed. And so, you know, metaphorically, everyone found themselves sitting at that weird candelabra-like table with the place cards. And trying to find a way to get one of those new tables has been, I would say, the major challenge of the school, because you always find, people are saying, oh, well, I don't have a voice, or, oh, things aren't the way they used to be, and they should be, and that's what really matters. So I think that that table, when I was reading about that table, I really thought about that sort of cultural divide. I almost see it as sort of an invisible table, that issue that we face in our building a lot of the time.
That table for us in our school is more figurative than it is literal. Mostly, if you look at the place cards, like the people that are from the town and that are alumni, I told you that like 75% of my teachers are alumni of the high school. So when we have those kind of discussions, I feel like that person sitting on the outside of the table, because you're not from here. So those place cards are that way. So that's the hard part to try to break through, that, you know, people on the outside, you know, said in the book, you know, had these great ideas, but they didn't feel like they were going to be listened to, or they're going to be heard. And so that's a lot of the stuff that we battle there, is just that, well, you're not from here. You don't understand how things are done here. So that table then becomes this barrier to growth or any positive change.
Yeah, I think I could kind of build on that sentiment a little bit. And I won't pretend to be that embedded yet in this new community school, but you know, with a week under my belt, I'm starting to see some things, and some of that rings true, John. The director of like kind of the secondary for the county came in and talked to me today, and she was kind of telling me some highlights. She had been a principal at this school 4 years ago. She was giving me some highlights and some people to watch out for that she knew that were still there. And The theme seemed to be, you know, some of these people grew up in the town, went to school in the town, did leave to go to college, but then came back and worked in the school. And that's like the only lens they've got. And she almost didn't even say it necessarily as like they would be negative, like John was kind of saying, like, man, you're not from here, you don't get it. But more so like they're just that narrow, like, bringing new ideas, or just fearful of trying anything, or even seeing past the town. So I'm just wondering, like, is sort of the borders of the town, you know, metaphorically, what I'm dealing with right now. I'm going to see how that plays out.
I think at my school, a lot of our table would be the formality of everything that we have. All the processes have to be very formal. You're supposed to go through all of the appropriate channels, and it just leaves people to feel like they can't really take ownership in what they really want to create, which I feel like brings everyone to more of a collective excitement over what they're doing. Whereas, you know, instead of having to go through one person ever go through so many procedural approvals, it just seems a little overwhelming to do all of that.
Hey, Sarah, Roxanne, I threw it in the chat, but maybe you didn't see it. But we're talking about the table that Ed Catmull discussed in Chapter 1. And we're just wondering if you have a real or metaphorical table that is a barrier to people's participation, you know, barriers to creativity or communication in your school.
The table with the name placards. Right. Is that what you're talking about?
Yep.
Okay. I'm thinking one thing could be, I'm just thinking about location and proximity and access, and so just the locations and where meetings are held, and just thought, I'm just some thoughts in my mind. We have our meetings towards the front of the school. I don't know. That kind of got me thinking about where we have our meetings, and it's usually the same spot, and we've got a rectangular table. But it did get me thinking. Nothing very kind of fixed.
You know, Daniel, I'm surprised that you didn't bring up the thing that, like, I don't know whether everybody else found this shocking or not, but that wasn't everybody freaked out about Toy Story 2, the thing about the baby? About the baby in the car?
Yeah, with leaving the kid in there. That brings me to question number two, because that was around page 62. And I think that was the catalyst for Ed to realize, am I taking care of my people and really being worried about their health? And from there, they made some changes with hours that they worked. I think they said they put in soccer, volleyball. They put in some fields, some places where they can, you know, get some fitness and that sort of thing. So that was actually another question. Actually, around page 76. But what do you do to keep people happy and healthy at your school, if anything?
We launched I do all sorts of things in terms of this effort. Like, that's been something I've been really interested in.
Like trifling.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, there's a couple different things. Exactly. I'm not trifling on this at all. I'm not trifling when it comes to teacher wellness. We did a teacher wellness initiative 2 years ago. We kind of followed it after that school in New Zealand that did that with the guy who has that free teacher wellness packet, which is really interesting. We formed a team to kind of do that. I try to talk to people a lot that I notice are working a lot to the point of it's problematic. I try to write these thank you notes to people all the time. I mean, I'm trying to do a lot of those things. I give people the gift of time every teacher appreciation week, where they get that hour if they want to come in later or earlier, and I cover their class. I bake a cake every month for them. I mean, I try to do all sorts of little things to kind of take care of them as much as possible. You know, if someone's got a problem, a personal issue where they've got an emergency where they've got to leave, I'll cover their class so they can get home and do whatever. I mean, I try to do whatever I can to make it, you know, a place where they can work hard, like what Catmull said, and he had that quote about, like, you have to be smarter than everybody else in order to be successful. I thought that was a really interesting quote. I'm trying really hard to do that for folks, you know, to really make that happen for them.
I don't know that my last school we did anything intentional in terms of wellness, although, you know, we had this state-of-the-art gym that we put in there, which, if I'm being transparent, I always thought it was kind of ironic that we promoted it as this awesome gym, and it was. I mean, I utilized it all the time, but yet we were so afraid to, like, open it up to the community, and mostly because, man, the kids would just trash it sometimes, and it was, like, heartbreaking, you know, what we called privileged poverty, where they're just kind of, everything is given, so they don't always respect it like you wish they would, but we tried to encourage the staff to get down there and, like, use it as much as we could, and some people would take advantage of it, get on the ellipticals and stuff like that, but there was never, like, a, you know, organized efforts to do it, or let's meet down here, or something like that. I try to model that sort of through my own leadership and Fit Leaders campaign that I've been real heavy on for, like, the last 6 months, you know, in terms of, like, promoting that kind of lifestyle. But just getting people, like, keeping people happy. And Colin and other, I'd be curious about your guys' takeaway on this. You know, my mentor is always just sort of really beating my head that we're definitely not in a people pleasing business, and you've got to be weary about just that word happy, I think is maybe what I'm hung up on. But you know, taco bars and ice cream at faculty meetings, you know, things like that. Just showing appreciation, you know, making people feel appreciated. I felt like we did a really good job of that, you know, at least monthly. We're trying to do something different or unique to kind of make teachers feel appreciated. Keeping them happy. Is that our job?
Good question to ask.
What's the connection between happiness and morale?
I mean, there could be a strong correlation, but there's so many external factors that impact happiness. How much are we in charge of?
I think there are things that we are in charge of, though, in the sense that if you despise going to work every day in the morning, then you're not going to be at the top of your game. I think like the things like Colin was saying, I tried to do a lot of those things as well, but I think that I felt like at some point that I was almost trying to buy my staff's happiness, and that was a losing battle. And so like first semester, I brought them breakfast every single Monday morning, every Monday, brought them like bagels, donuts, whatever it was, and put it in the teacher's lounge. But that's the thing, like if few of them were happy about it, but morale-wise, I don't think we got a huge impact on that. But then when we went like for teacher appreciation, when we made cards that were individualized for every individual person, that seemed to actually make some of the biggest impact for us, because they were all different and they were all highlighting on individuals, and they were all signed by all of the admin team, but each person had written certain ones for certain people. So it was, I think we got more bang for our buck in that, and that just cost us cards and time.
Because with all those food items, are you buying happiness or are you buying teacher favor?
Right? Not a lot. Spending a lot of money for a lot of nothing.
You know what I mean? Because you do those things on a consistent basis, and all of a sudden something happens that you don't do it, and then all of a sudden people, well, where are the donuts? How come there are no donuts for this meeting?
Well, that meeting happened during second semester.
Donuts are not, you know? And that's the kind of thing of, like, people showing up, the idea of, well, you can get a teenager to do damn near anything for a $5 T-shirt. You know, but then you see those programs that don't have, they still have success, you know, looking football wise, look at, have success, but don't have money. So it becomes an interesting paradigm, right? I'm kind of on board with you that, you know, I think our job is to make sure that the teachers feel appreciated and supported. Cause I've had time that I've had tough battles that I haven't been happy, but I felt appreciated and I was okay to move forward.
I think it's just, I think it's just a slippery slope. I think that's it. I'll kind of just leave it at that. I do feel we need to make these efforts, like, you know, many hands make light work, make allies, not enemies. I'm here to support. I appreciate you. But when we get into happiness, it's a slippery slope. Where does it end?
Yeah, maybe happy wasn't the right term. You know, the thing that I was really focusing on, I guess, is that he was making people healthy, which, you know, you addressed at the beginning. So maybe you can go back and talk about, I know you modeled, so the Fit Leader stuff.
No, and I do agree with that. I mean, if you guys haven't read, is it John Medina's Brain Rules? Man, the science on that, you know, just the science on our health and the correlation to thinking and just productivity and stuff like that. But the brain research is just is awesome. So I'm all about that and just sustaining healthy leaders. You know, my whole thing is healthy leaders last, and getting teachers to think like that too, especially coming from a school district where, ooh, people maximize their time off and days off when subs are hard to come by, just, you know, like the system was going to implode. So getting people healthy and increasing their quality of life and increasing their productivity, I'm all for it.
I had a surreal conversation once with when we were doing the teacher wellness project. And the first one that they do at this school in New Zealand is they do a water week, and they encourage people to drink more water. And I was working on a team. It was a bunch of teachers that were kind of involved with this project with me, school nurse. And people were saying, see, you're following through. And they were like, oh, if we tell people to drink more water, they'll feel like we're telling them what to do. And some people might say, well, if I drink more water, I'm going to need to go to the bathroom. Who's going to cover me while I have to go to the bathroom? And there was this whole ridiculous conversation that occurred. And we wound up going with some different things instead. But it highlighted to me the complexity of the nature of kind of working in a school environment today. And I realized that the Teacher Wellness Project, although, you know, it was successful and people, you know, we did a survey and people said that they really liked it, I felt that it really pointed out that there's deeper issues there that need to be addressed about climate, about how people support each other. I mean, I can do as much as I can to support all the teachers in my school, but sometimes teachers don't support each other. And that's really hard. There's like a certain way that things are viewed. And that's tough because I try to really promote what I want for the building, but I find that sometimes that is that element of like sort of a funny building culture that's there that may have been there before I was arrived is, you know, I feel like sometimes I'm always fighting that dragon.
I just love what you said, Colin. That was awesome. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, thank you.
Colin, do you think that negative attitude is pervasive, or do you think it's isolated to just a few people?
I think it is isolated to a few people, but I would say what's interesting about my building culture is I worked in other schools where some of those people have less power and voice, but at our school, some of those people, because they've been like sort of the people that speak truth to power or whatever it is, they have a little more influence. So they kind of are, they have more of an impact on the overall culture of the building.
I just, as you talk, I hear Todd Whitaker in the back of my head talking about how we make decisions for the poor few, and right. Not the, you know, not our best teachers, but our worst. And that's, I don't know if that applies, but it just was something that I was curious about.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think.
No, please go. Did a kid get you, Kyle?
I went to an empathy training, and it talked a lot about kind of that, building that teacher to teacher, not just like administration to teacher, but getting teachers to be more supportive to each other so that it's just a more supportive environment overall. It was just really interesting to me. The training I went to is something that you could roll out at an all-school level, which we're not doing at my campus this year. I kind of went out to see what it was looking like, but it was, I don't know, it was really interesting. It made me think about a lot of the ways I talk with my team.
What were some key takeaways you had from that training then? Because I caught that you were talking about empathy training and how you communicate, but what did you specifically get out of it?
There's a lot of times where I know that I personally have, I tend to be a hot-tempered person, so I react first, and then I think about things. And I can think through things pretty logically, and after I'm past my being upset about them. And I can't talk before then about things. And that's the thing that I was learning about myself, and that's the thing that I was thinking about with my team, is generally people would come to me, and they would complain about so many things. And the times where I sat back and I listened, and I let them really talk it out and didn't provide any kind of guidance for them in the moment, usually they came to better solutions than when I tried to solve their problem for them, because they weren't ready for a problem to be solved. And that's probably why not what they were coming for anyway. Now, there's a difference between that, because I've also gotten stuck in my office talking for 2 hours with a teacher that was just telling me that she couldn't hold back her sarcasm from our students. And that she didn't feel like she had to change herself, that she couldn't change her personality. And I think that in that moment, that wouldn't necessarily be the time to be empathetic. That would be the time to be like, oh, no, you need to do this. You cannot be sarcastic with those kids. It's obviously not going well, and they're finding you to be a bully in the classroom. But in other instances where somebody is having a really hard time, I think going the empathetic route, listening and taking it in, and then just basically it's mirroring. Saying whatever they say back to you, back to them. So I feel, so you're saying this, wow, that sounds really hard. That sounds really frustrating. And then letting them take it to where they want it to be. The thing that I noticed the most, sorry, I'm talking too much right now, was that it was really interesting when you didn't ask questions, when you just made a statement of observation of what they were telling you, that they brought what they wanted to tell you to something else than necessarily your questions would have gone to. I was practicing with a woman who was telling me about some struggle she was having with her husband just as a practicing group. And I wanted to ask lots of questions because she said that her husband was from Africa and that he had a very different culture. I wanted to know all about these things. That wasn't what was bothering her. And had I asked these questions, she would have gone on to answer them. But that wasn't what was bothering her. And what was bothering her would have never come out because I wouldn't have asked it. And so it's just interesting to me how if you give people the time and just kind of give them the moment to say it, they'll tell you what's actually bothering them.
That's great stuff. There's so much power in questions. And Ed Catmull talks about that in the book. Tony Robbins talks about if you want, you know, better answers, you got to ask better questions. Ed talked about, I think, Steve Jobs and just the amount of questions and great questions he asked head of like what the direction Pixar was heading in, really helped him create an organization that, you know, has produced some pretty amazing movies now that we, you know, watch them and stuff. By the way, looking forward to the Pets one coming out on July 8th. Don't know about you, but I think that's going to be awesome. And another thing with questions too, Brené Brown, I listened to her book, Rising Strong, and she's down in Houston. So if I move there, I'm going to definitely stalk her and try to meet her and get her on the podcast. But one of the phrases that she uses from Rising Strong that I think would be very helpful to everybody is, the story I'm telling myself is this. And you use that right in some type of situation. You could use it in your relationships with your partners, but you could use it with your people as well. Because what happens is we think we have a read on a situation and understand everything that's going on. And many times, right, it could be just completely off. And so by saying, hey, the story I'm telling myself is X, Y, and Z, can you help clarify or correct like whatever errors I have? You can unearth some really powerful stuff.
I want to make a quick connection to that because that was also awesome. And I love that. I just listened to Crucial Conversations a couple weeks ago in my car, in my commute. And that was a lot about what they also talked about in that book, which was talking about, you know, like the stories we tell ourselves versus the story other people are telling themselves and how those can kind of clash to make situations difficult.
So I'm going to tell you a funny story before the hot seat because, you know, I love Crucial Conversations and I've read it a number of times, multiple times. I've taken rigorous notes. And one of the first times I tried to have a crucial conversation, it was with the union head at our school. And she was not one of our top performers. She was also very absent, like a lot of teachers in Ryan's former district. She basically was gone all the time. Mostly like the second half of each school year. And even before that, she would just not be at school. The problem is her room had the books for the entire English department in her room. And when she wasn't there, the sub could get a key. But for some reason, I think she was the only one who had I had a book room key. She had a book room key. So there wasn't very many keys. So when she was absent, I used to open up her room and the book room because I was getting really frustrated that teachers would not have access to the books and therefore the kids wouldn't have access to the books for great instruction. That was really pissing me off, to tell you the truth. So I reread, you know, parts of Crucial Conversations. I kind of scripted out how this conversation would go. She finally showed up to work, so I invited her to a conversation. We had it in her room. I figured, shoot, you know, definitely not in my office. Let's have it in her office and give her some power, whatever. And the conversation didn't go as planned at all. And even though I was trying to, I forget how they phrase it, but basically, you know, if somebody's getting upset, you say, no, that's not what I mean. What I mean is this. You try to clarify it. Like nothing I learned in that book, starting from the heart, like everything I learned, none of it worked. And I got so exasperated by, just so frustrated by this conversation not working and that she, you know, essentially blocked access to all the books. She wanted me to give up my key to her room, okay? And at the time, I didn't realize how sacred her room was, like her boundaries. And looking back, that would be something I'd be more cognizant of, because that could have probably helped the conversation go. She was worried I was going to like steal the union papers and I don't know, do what with it, but I really could care less about that stuff. Anyways, I took the key and I said, I will never, ever give this key back. And it became this power struggle. You know, I threw in the towel because the conversation went so poorly. And yeah, I really handled that bad. The next day, I was like having a conversation with God and I said, man, if she walks down this hall, because I was like sort of negotiating with God because she was always the first one out, right? 3:30 is when the school day ends. And so it was like 3:45. There's no way she's in the building. And I said, God, if she walks down the hall, I promise I will apologize and I'll tell her that I handled it poorly and I disrespected her. And, you know, I I would eat crow. And wouldn't you know it, like 30 seconds after I hung up and said amen, here comes that dang teacher who should have been gone like 15 minutes ago. And, you know, it was a good experience. I apologized to her, and I think that brought us closer. And I didn't give my key back, but, man, I handled it so bad.
I swear, man, I thought you were going to say that you ate the key in front of her, that you swallowed it. When you held it up, I thought you were going to say I swallowed it right in front of her.
Actually, so now that's one of my favorite stories to tell because I just did such a terrible job of holding a crucial conversation. I am now going to add that to my retelling of the story just to up the ante. And then I'll tell people I'm lying, but I think that would be really fun.
Get it back now.
You'll have to wait 24 hours. Okay, so I'm stealing the hot seat for this week, and I really appreciate you all being flexible for me and Roxana's next week because I should have an interview with the Houston school next week. I'm in a weird space because I'm very excited for this position. It's in Houston. They're doing some really cool stuff. They got House Bill 1842. They're a part of that in Texas, so that it gave them a lot of autonomy and ability to be innovative in their schools. And John mentioned in Voxer, and it's also mentioned in our book, that guy Deming, right, who's a engineer, and he went over – well, Americans wouldn't listen to him. He went over to Japan, and he improved the assembly line process, and he said, let's – let people closest to the problem solve the problems, right? And the superintendent actually discusses part of that story in his letter to the community. I'm like, man, if, you know, I don't know, just all these connections, right? Like, what are the odds? And it was just exciting to me. So I read their local innovation plan, and they're doing some really great stuff. The position I'm interviewing for is for elementary school, which I have zero, absolutely well, no, I have like 2% experience in because I worked as a observer and pre-service teacher for early childhood educators at the University of Illinois. So I was in classrooms. I did give them feedback. But, you know, I've never taught and I've never been a leader in an early childhood setting. However, I don't see that. A lot of hugs. And I love hugs. So that's good. I'm great with my nephews. So I think I could crush it. And I think it's a big, big positive that I've done 10 years in middle school, 6 in high school. So I know where the kids are going too, right? And that could help us in how we structure the elementary school. With that being said though, and I could talk personalized learning, they're going to be doing all that. What do you think I need to know besides hugs? Sorry, microphone. You know, how could I best prepare for an elementary position and interview?
Today's show is sponsored by KickUp, a professional learning data analytics company that provides an easy-to-use platform, helping school leaders optimize their PD resources and efforts by soliciting and synthesizing teacher input on professional development needs, creating an intuitive and simple dashboard so leaders can take immediate and informed action to support teachers, measuring and reporting the impact of the PD efforts over time. Schools, districts, and charter networks leverage KickUp's platform and consultative support to synthesize data so that all stakeholders, administrators, coaches, and teachers can monitor progress, identify meaningful professional learning actions, and demonstrate and share impact. Learn more at kickup.co. Leading a school may be the most difficult job in the world, but what if I could guarantee that you could accomplish so much more in 1 year than you've been able to in any years past? The secret is to stop leading in isolation and to do so in community. The solution is to join one of my education masterminds. We meet weekly for an hour and discuss leadership and solve complex problems. Text Better Mastermind, that's all one word, to 33444. That's Better Mastermind to 33444 and start your journey to your best year ever. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge 10 bucks a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Now, back to the show.
You know, I think that one of the things that you need to do is you need to probably have a few conversations with some people that are outstanding elementary school teachers and elementary school leaders, and just take a look at some of the things that make that school very special. Even also, and the other thing I would to do is talk to some parents that really love their elementary school. Those are things that I think are very important to kind of hear what those things are that make those schools special. But not just any elementary school, really high-performing, excellent elementary schools known for their academic achievement and for their outstanding school culture. There's this school, oh my gosh, there's this school in North Carolina. They do something with their fifth graders where the fifth graders come in and like teach people about the leadership skills that they learned or something like that. They're very, very well known. It's a very, very well known school. I mean, that's really kind of impressive in terms of things like that, looking at what, you know, can be done. And then looking at just simply, you know, some basic things about your role in terms of how you're present for elementary school students versus how you're present for a middle school or high school student. It's a little different. It's a little bit of a different vibe, and thinking about that is really important too. You know, what's that going to be like? What are you going to be doing? So that everybody knows who you are and where you are. I think that matters a lot.
I want to talk about this kind of from a selfish standpoint. I think out of all three of the tiers, I'm interested in that tier the least. Okay. However, when I was asked about this recently, when they were like talking about, hey, which tier will you be applying for in Metro Nashville? Because there were 18 openings in elementary school. So naturally it was like, hey man, if you want an opportunity, clearly there's one high school opening, three middle schools, and 18 elementary openings. And it was just like, oh man, I can't do that. So as I'm trying to kind of like charge myself up and think like, what would get me going on this, Daniel? This is what started to turn me a little bit. Still wouldn't want to do it, but it was starting to turn me a little bit. Was, you know, that just the early brain research, man, on the elasticity of the brain at those young ages and how I would pour and key in on that, you know, everything just from literacy and really just brain development, brain growth, and talk about how you're preparing, you know, these young brains for what you know is to come. But I would just dig into some of the science on that, man. Some of the early brain development. You know, I would, this is me. I mean, I told you this from a selfish standpoint, you know, taking coding down, you know, my love for computer science all the way down to that grade, to some of those early grades and how I think we missed that, you know, especially in the United States. That would be another selling thing. And then the correlation between that, the elasticity of the brain and getting them to learn coding as another language at an age where they're more adaptable to languages and things like that. These are just things that I would have in my tool bag if I was going in there on a, hey, what do you look to implement? What are some of the things? The brain research behind early childhood development, you know, and getting kids into coding or computer science at an early age.
And there are absolutely some great resources out there for elementary coding. I know like even at like the kindergarten level, we're getting a set of V-Bots for our school to start with our kinders. I think that's an awesome innovation to go in with, because it's something that they can learn, and they can, it's very structured so that they can learn the steps that they need to. I love that. I would say in Texas, I don't know your specific district's demographics, but you might want to, at least in Austin, the majority of our ESL population is in our elementary grade levels, because they exit as they get older. And so having probably not, depending on your district, not necessarily the most knowledge, but of ESL and bilingual programs and having some idea on those. I didn't when I went in, and I know that I just kind of went with what we had because I didn't have to interview. I was asked, which is what our district did. But if I was interviewing in Austin, I would have a lot to say about either ESL or bilingual, depending on the campus.
I would echo what Kyle's saying, just because it is, every state has an influx of ESL student or English language learners, but it would, I think, benefit you to kind of brush up on just the different types of programs and that the district offers in regards to second language learners, for sure. And then another thing I think Colin brought up was just, I'm sure you've been on their website, you've looked at their mission statement or their beliefs, and just kind of looking that over and making sure, just gives you good context going in, I think would be beneficial. But I think, I don't know if that would give you a good idea if they're a testing campus or not, or how they review or how they measure student success. I don't know if you've gotten a feel of if they're very test driven or not. But those are kind of questions that are going kind of playing in my mind. Also, just, I think kids are kids wherever they are, and I think bringing in just the excitement that you naturally have is going to be great. And then mentioning specifics are good too, of ideas that you have. But it's exciting. And then I think the piece of having fun is important. Just the time and the balance to have fun is a kind of, for me, I would think would be neat to mention.
You mean in the school for the students and the staff? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I think, students for sure. And then, I mean, I think just, and then again, it's hard going in because I don't know a lot of context about the school, but just to know that let me just kind of process a bit, because I don't just want to, and I'll think about it and I'll come back, but what I want to say.
Daniel, one thing you really have to have an articulated vision about if you're talking about an elementary school position is your thoughts about play. Because you have to also know where you stand on this. Because as an elementary school principal, you're going to be perpetually against the wall for two things. Versus pushing the academics, this idea of like, how can you have more technology? How can you have kindergartners coding, right? You're going to get that. But then you're also going to get this other force of, how much recess are they going to get? And where do you stand on that? And you have to have a defined position, or a position that you have to kind of begin to form an opinion about that. Because that's really important about the issue of play. And what does that look like? What do you think about kindergarten, for instance? This is an interesting question. Do you think kindergarten is primarily an academic experience? Is it play-based? Is it social-emotional? Is it some combination thereof? What are the percentages? I know these are kind of tough questions. I sound like Steve Jobs here, but you kind of have to decide those things, because that's really going to shape who you are as an elementary school principal. You know, it's kind of funny because I figured I would just be a middle school principal like forever. But then when this position came and I wound up getting pre-K and elementary along with middle school, I've really become very interested in elementary. And I think I'd be, you know, perfectly happy taking another elementary position. But I think one of the things that it's become is I've really learned a lot and really kind of developed opinions about where I stand on some of these big issues. But you really need to decide about this issue of play, because that's where you're going to be constantly fighting a lot of battles on that. That's where you're going to really find the push versus the testing, the academics, and then the issue of them being children, because some of the things that they're asked to do in school is very inappropriate for them developmentally. Where do you stand on homework? When does homework come into? Should there be homework in second grade? We have a, you know, Alfie Cohn says no way. Other people say yes. So, you know, it's just, you know, I mean, you might want to start to, you may not have that much of a choice in the Houston public schools, but you might want to have an opinion about how to work around that. So forming your viewpoint there, I think those big questions matter, because sometimes, remember, a second grader is not an 11th grader. They're really different animals and they have really different priorities. Here's another one. I'm just going to throw another hypothetical. What happens, because this actually happened at school this year. I was so mad about it. We had a little girl, one of my favorite kids in school, such a sweetheart. She was coming in every morning and she was crying in the morning in the office for about a few minutes. And then she would go to class. And what we found out is that this had a lot to do with the parents separating. But we did not have a facility at that time for dealing with this. But how are you going to deal with stuff like that? You know, and what do you do when your school doesn't have the facility for that? How will you respond to those things? Because those are real life elementary things that happen.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that. So I've been in elementary for 12 years. And if you want to get together, Daniel, next week when I get back, we could have coffee and chat about instruction or whatever. I'm cool with that. But it is important to think about the homework. And this is part of the reason why I do not want my own children to go to public schools in Chicago, because I feel like it's too much testing. It's way too much homework that we're almost mandated give homework to kindergartners, which I think is absolutely ridiculous. And I don't think I really grasped that until I had children of my own. And then it gets to the point where you're like, when are kids kids anymore? You know? And the whole developmental thing, especially now, and I don't think Texas is Texas Common Core? No. So, okay. So that, at least you don't have to deal with that. But like third grade with Common Core, the first year they took the test, I just looking at the test, walking around, I think it's totally developmentally inappropriate for some third graders, because they develop at, you know, different ages. Like at the beginning of third grade this year, I literally had kids losing their front teeth. Now, sometimes that happens at first grade. I guess sometimes at third grade, but just knowing the kids and, you know, kind of where they are. But then there's a whole thing with the teachers and instruction, and what does instruction look like? What would you think instruction would look like in a first grade classroom for a reading block or a math block? Like, what would you think would tell you that the kids are engaged? Now, that's going to look probably different than it would in a high school history class or whatever. But maybe you could even, I know it's summer school right now in Chicago, but maybe if you could even go in and just sit in a classroom in an elementary class before you actually went on your interview. And another thing that I was thinking, because I tend to get this question a lot, if I interview for a middle school position, right? All my background's in elementary. And one of the first questions is always, why do you want to go to elementary or go to middle school? Because your entire background is in elementary. And basically, what do you have to offer? And why do you want to make this switch? So that's just another thing to think about, because that's probably going to be a question.
I personally, you couldn't pay me enough money to interview for an elementary thing. I'm like, Ryan, those kids scare me. I did a long-term sub second grade during the winter time, and I got sick and it was snot everywhere. But one of the things that I think that I personally, just having gone through the interview process a lot this year, two things. One is I would put together some kind of 90-day entry plan. What is the first 90 days? And I can send you mine just if you want to see it. What is the first 90 days of Daniel Bauer being the leader of this building look like? And that it does two things. One is it gives people a sense of, okay, this guy has thought how he's going to step into our world and how his philosophy is going to meld and mesh into what we have going on. And the other thing is as these questions come up, is it allows you to refer back to your philosophy and your mission statement and your belief structure. because I think if you're going from one state to another, it's not hard to put Daniel Bauer into Google and see all the people you've talked to. And if I'm a teacher in another state, one thing could be think of this guy's going to come in and change the landscape of what we're doing. And I think the thing you want to make sure you're conveying is you're going to come in and ask those good questions and have those great conversations and learn the culture and collectively build a group that is going to positively affect kids. So as you go to these things, I mean, there's going to be questions you're going to be asked that you don't have experience or you just don't have an answer for, but you can always refer back to that philosophy and that structure as this is what we're going to do to answer those questions and really build upon that. I think that's something that would be valuable no matter where you interview, is to see what would 90 days of me coming in look like anywhere I go, and then you can tailor that.
I like that. That's great. That's a great idea.
Hey, John, if you're willing to share that, I'd love to see your
90
day as well.
I would love to see that.
I'll post it up to the Facebook thing. Although, can I put a PDF file up there? I don't know if I can.
I think so, but do you have Google Drive too?
Yeah, I've got a Google Drive.
Because then if you
that's where everything is. I've got a few versions of that I've used. So I'll share that with you, Daniel, and then if you want to share it out or whatever.
Okay, I was also going to say if you just do the share the link so anybody with the link can view it, you can throw that in the Facebook.
That's what I'll do. I'll do that tonight.
Daniel, the other thing you should know is that elementary culture, school culture is a little different than high school or middle school. It has a little bit of a different feel. There's a little bit of a different vibe with the teachers. Elementary school teachers are a little different. So it's kind of like it's not completely different, but there is something a little different about working with elementary school teachers. There's awesome things about it. And then there's some different things about it. One person described it to me this way is that sometimes elementary school teachers, they're very much like identify sort of with the age that they teach. Like, you know, kindergarten teachers are hardcore into being kindergarten teachers, you know, but they're not a fifth grade teacher because a fifth grade teacher is very different. And that's kind of important to think about because sometimes when you work in the middle school or high school, and you're in the middle school, you might teach sixth grade one year, but maybe someone needs you to teach eighth grade the next year, and it's not a big deal because you're more of a subject area. And then the people in elementary school, they tend to be generalists. So sometimes you have situations, which is kind of interesting from a professional development standpoint, where like you might have a teacher that's super strong with literacy, but feels some level of insecurity teaching math. And thinking about how you support that person. And what's really awesome, like with working with elementary school teachers, this is the best thing, is when you have moments where you guys are working in such synchronicity that teacher is coming to you and saying, I feel uncomfortable about teaching math, but because of these things that were this professional development that you provided to me, I really am feeling so much better about it. Now I'm really enjoying my work in math and I'm beginning to view myself as a much stronger math teacher. So, you know, that's something you always have to remember is that PD is a little different in elementary school, but you really have to be paying attention to that because you're really, sometimes people really need some of that content PD too. It's a little different than just teaching strategy. Sometimes people need support with just teaching content.
That's good.
Absolutely true. And kindergarten teachers generally are like kindergarten teachers, and going to fifth grade would be like they're almost changing their career sometimes, really. And another thing with elementary teachers that I think might be, and correct me if I'm wrong, but compared to middle school and high school, is that elementary school teachers get their group, their class for the year, right? And they are like mama bear to that class. So that is probably maybe different than you're used to with teachers working with them in middle school and high school, because they really take on that like mommy role of their class. And so sometimes, not always, but like sometimes the morale and different, what am I trying to say? The culture of the school, they get competitive in nature. And some teachers have a hard time, elementary school teachers, really coming together with another teacher in that building to collaborate because that's their class. Does that make sense? I don't know if I'm making any sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And you have to watch out for the fixers. You know that? Remember the fixers, Sarah? The people that are like, when the kid is with me, I fix the problem. There was no problem this year. But then the kid goes to first grade, and everyone's like, what the hell is this?
Exactly. Yikes.
That is like the biggest problem in elementary.
I don't have a problem when I'm there. But when I'm not, and then they think that there's something wrong with the adult or something, and it's not the kid, because I don't ever have a problem with the kid. And so it's not so much like getting to the bottom or the root of the problem is like, you know, well, I don't know what to tell you. I don't have that problem. So sometimes you get a little bit of that with teachers, I think, in elementary.
Okay. I want to sneak one last question in, but we will stop at 9. So, all right. I have some job opportunities. That's great. Cool. I'm not going to lose any sleep if I don't get any of them. I have a plan. You know, part of it, I have clients right now that want to start podcasts and they pay me. And I know what number I need to get to, and I can make a living doing that. I don't want to walk away from education, but I'm just saying I have a plan. Part of that plan too is, do you think there would be any interest in offering support to newer teachers? For example, Roxanna's school is very fortunate to have her, that they can afford her salary and her expertise at a school and have an instructional coach. Not every school could do that. But do you think there'd be any interest for school districts and schools to do some type of online coaching in a group setting that would be, you know, a handful of $1,000 as opposed to, you know, a big time salary? Because if I launched a few groups like that, then I'm just trying to figure out how I'm going to eat, right? Make ends meet if I don't get some of these jobs. Because I'm leaving. My moving truck is ordered for July 29th. So I'm walking away from Brooks. I hope to get, you know, an administrative position, but there's other things I'm considering. So thoughts for the last 3 minutes.
You researched just what's out there already and how it's different than what's already out there? Because I'm just coming to mind thinking about in Texas what we've had in our educational centers, and I'm not too familiar with other states, but they're run by the state of Texas, and they receive funding, and part of their services includes coaching opportunities, and the districts have cohorts and they pay for those services. So I'm just wondering if you've kind of checked to see if that what was available or what the demand is and what's out there right now.
Yeah, no, I would have to do more market research in terms of that. But what I know is, I mean, I have a podcast, which is how I got connected to all of you. There's people that subscribe right to the email newsletter, and a lot of those people are leaders of schools. So I wondered if I said, hey, you know, here's where I'm at, and I'd love to help your teachers. The problem is you can't afford a instructional coach at $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 or whatever, $1,000 or more. But you could afford me at this price, which is way, way cheaper. You know what I mean? Is that something you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, I would want it.
I think if you leverage it using your PLN and then build traction that way, you know, kind of a grassroots campaign until you reach critical mass, that's going to be your best effort, and probably an oversaturated market, kind of like what Roxanne is saying. I can't speak to other states, but depending on what your price point was, yeah, you know, I think you could reach out to leaders like myself and say, look, here's what I can do. Let's talk turkey, but really leverage those contacts you have.
This is incredibly, I think there's a whole way to market this personally, because here's the thing, like in New Jersey, the way it works is that you have to assign the teacher a mentor. It has to be someone that's experienced. And sometimes just due to the nature of the convenience of it, I might assign a teacher on a team to it. Like for instance, I had two new teachers in second grade. So I had to assign them, they both had the mentor of the seasoned second grade teacher. The only problem with this is although she's a good teacher, she's also totally certifiably nuts. So that makes it very hard, because I think they're getting good advice, but they're also spending time with a crazy person. And I think that you want to kind of filter that out and provide them with sort of another kind of coach that can work with them in a different way. They can talk to people. They can talk to the coach in a way that has some unfiltered private opportunity for them to really kind of work stuff out. I mean, I think it's very exciting. It's something that I would love to provide to my new teachers. It would be a huge, it would be very fulfilling to me in terms of an opportunity, another way that we just offer more to our new teachers than other places. So I think sometimes I think for your marketing for this, you want to look at schools that have much more control over their budget. Like Kyle, you probably have a lot of control over your budget like I do. So I have a lot of ability to spend the way I want to spend on PD. So charters are good to look at, and, you know, sort of special schools that have more independence in terms of like district funding, you know, are good places to look. So you could go hit the charter school conferences, stuff like that. You know, I can certainly hook you up with people in New Jersey to talk to them if you were interested. Like I could hook you up with our charter school organization very easily. But I think those are good places to look.
Great. Well, thanks for all the feedback, guys. You're always the best. I enjoy connecting, and I benefited a lot from being on the hot seat today. Roxana, you're up next week. I'll send an email out, but we're going to be reading chapters 5, 6, 7, and 8. Hope you're enjoying the book, and go see the pet movie on July 8th. Love y'all. And
bye, see guys.
Birthday tomorrow, too. Isn't tomorrow your birthday, Daniel?
Oh, yeah. Sing me a song.
What's the birthday song?
Yeah, the birthday song.
Does Roxana have the birthday song?
Okay, ready? Y'all yeah, ready?
Ready.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. One, two, three.
Happy birthday
to you. No, Roxana has their own.
Why am I the only one singing?
Roxana has her own song, right?
Roxana
has a special birthday song.
Oh, it's like sorry.
Ready? All right. You have to listen.
Okay.
This is a birthday song. It isn't very long. That's it.
The end.
Happy birthday, Danny.
Happy birthday, Danny.
Happy birthday.
All right, I'll see you next week. Take care.
See you guys.
Bye.
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 Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.